Welcome to the Eldritch Estate, an establishment dedicated to the bizarre, the dark, and all that is otherworldly. We invite our guests to come and stay a while, to enjoy the haunted hallways, the shrieks of terror and delight, to forget time in our enchantingly disturbing abode. Whether it's for an overnighter or a week-long stay, our hostesses will see to it that you are shocked, horrified, and left morbidly curious about the goings-on here at the estate. Will you take a trip with us? We can't wait for you to see what's in store.
Hello, and welcome back to the Eldritch Estate. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Katie. Welcome back.
Oh my god.
We're home.
It's been so long, you guys.
We missed you.
We did. So our last episode posted on May 13th, 2022. And it's currently June of 2023.
I had a baby.
She had a baby, and it was a lot, you guys.
He's pretty cool, though.
He's like a whole year old now. Because she had the baby and then we didn't record for a whole year.
Listen, it was a little traumatic, but I missed you guys.
And so we know that it's been a while, and so if you're still here, thank you and welcome back, and we love you. And if you're new here, welcome.
Yeah.
So here at the Eldritch Estate, we do all things spooky. We are primarily like a true crime podcast, but we also do hauntings and cryptids and cults and conspiracy theories and aliens and paranormal and
I'm on my bullshit, so be prepared.
I'm back on my bullshit, baby.
And my bullshit is primarily all of the spooky.
Yes.
I'm feeling it.
However, with that being said, we're gonna kind of ease back into things, so we're not starting with a true crime episode for you today. We're actually just gonna be reading some creepypasta.
Which is haunted spaghetti.
Yes, exactly.
Just in case you're not informed.
The spooky macaroni. So I went on Reddit and I just found a couple of stories. We're gonna credit each of the authors, but if for whatever reason those people listen to this and don't want it shared on our podcast, just let me know. No problem.
Send us a little DM.
But we will give you credit where credit is due. So yeah, we just kind of combed through the creepypasta Reddit, picked out a couple of stories for you. We're gonna read them to you, just lull you off to sleep, a nice spooky bedtime story, and then we'll get cracking on the next episode.
It's gonna be great. Welcome home.
We're gonna get back into the swing of things, I know it. Okay, so without further ado, the first story I have here is by user Real Horror Diaries, and it's two parts. It's called Eerie Encounters, the Bill Vail Story.
And that's real, R-E-A-L, not real like Instagram.
Right, exactly. Okay, here we go. After working at NASA as a robotics engineer for 15 years, Bill Vail quit his job in 2002 after divorcing his wife and moved back to Arlington, Texas to be with his brother. To have a fresh start in his life, he started working in his brother's water purification company. Just a few weeks after he joined his brother's company, Bill had to take up a Saturday house call to make a good impression on his coworkers. Bill's work was to demonstrate the installation and usage of the company's water purification system in the customer's house. When he was about to leave for the customer's house, the dispatcher told him that the customer was adamant about him reaching her place at exactly 5 o'clock. She wanted to make sure that he did not arrive a minute early or late. Although it sounded weird to him, Bill obliged. When he reached the customer's doorstep at exactly 5 o'clock, Bill was greeted by loud, terrifying screams, coupled with the voice of a woman chanting something nonsensical. In the middle of her chants, she kept saying, "Go away," multiple times. Not sure what was going on, he peeked through the slightly opened door of the house. As he visually scanned, he saw three men kneeling down on the floor, forming a circle.
That's a triangle. I'm sorry.
I mean, would it really be us if there wasn't some sort of interjection?
I would have fucked up. They're like, be there exactly at 5 o'clock, and I'm over there at like 5:12. Yeah.
Sorry, there was traffic.
You know, I had to walk my car.
I had to stop by Starbucks on the way.
You know, I wish I was that person, but I can't even be timely enough to get Starbucks and be late, because then I'd be like 5:40.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so he saw three men kneeling down on the floor forming a circle. A woman was walking around them with a book in her hands, chanting something that did not make any sense to him. Although a complete skeptic, the eeriness of the chants was starting to get into his head, and he decided to leave the place. While Good he choice. Was about to leave, right?
It's like, good on you, Bill.
Nope.
He said, I've seen this movie. Yeah. I gotta go.
I gotta go. You know what? I actually have to shampoo my driveway, so I gotta go.
Take my car for a walk.
I need to trim my vacuum. While he was about to leave, the woman started staring right into his eyes while pointing her finger at him. Bill felt that the woman was trying to harm him and escaped the place at once.
Ooh, he got the oho.
Oh, shit. Once he was at a safe distance from the house, he called the dispatcher, told him about what had just happened, and requested to not be sent to that house again.
You don't call the dispatcher, you call a fucking priest.
Or the cops? I don't know.
Honestly, if you're gonna call anyone, just maybe...
You call somebody. Maybe you call Saul. I don't know.
Ghostbusters?
Later that day, Bill cooked his dinner and sat in front of his TV to watch it while he had his dinner. While watching the TV, he noticed something dart across the room in his peripheral. Bill assumed that it was a rodent that should have infiltrated the house, and he scanned the entire house hoping to find it, but his efforts ended in vain. Since it was already late, Bill decided to check again the next day and went to sleep. His sleep, however, did not last long, as he was woken up by the sensation of something running over his foot.
Throw the whole fucking house away. Right? Not good anymore.
Absolutely done.
First and foremost, I'm not going to sleep with a rodent in my house unless it is my pet.
Right.
No.
And even then, the pet should be in its enclosure.
Correct. Nice and safe. And not somewhere where it can scuttle over my foot.
Well, and like, that's dangerous. You don't want to accidentally roll on your little baby.
True.
His sleep, however, did not last long. I already read that part. He immediately concluded that it was the rodent he had seen earlier and checked the room completely, but found nothing. Bill convinced himself, saying that he was just making stuff up, and went back to sleep, only to be woken up yet again. Right. This time, he felt his bed shaking, which immediately brought him out of his slumber.
Nope.
But when he opened his eyes, the shaking stopped.
I guess. Nope, I don't like that.
Don't like that. Mm-mm, don't like that at all. Bill thought it was an earthquake, but all other objects in the room were in place. Being a pragmatic person, Bill tried to find a rational explanation for this, but couldn't find one. As Bill kept surfing the internet, searching for any nearby events that could have caused the shaking, his internet connection stopped working. Since he was not able to troubleshoot the issue himself, he called the service provider.
He met the human Dybbuk box.
And also, it's, like, late. Like, I know that most IT and stuff like that is, like, either all hours, 24 hours, or they're, like, overseas, so they're gonna answer anyway or yeah. Whatever, but it's late. And he went to the call at 5, and he's been trying to sleep a couple times now. After he had dinner and watched TV.
It's late.
While speaking to the executive, he suddenly started hearing a static sound which interrupted his conversation with the executive. Nonsensical chatters in a demonic voice followed this static. Bill was creeped out hearing this voice and immediately cut the call. A few moments later, the executive called him again to inform him that the internet connection was sorted out. When Bill asked this executive if he had heard this static, he confirmed that he also heard it and apologized to him for the fault being on his side.
Well, then you need to tell your demon to shut the fuck up.
Whose demon is working in IT? Bill, get your ass back to hell. After searching on the internet for a radical explanation, I think they meant rational, explanation for a really long time, Bill finally gave up and went back to his bed.
The only explanation for this better be fucking rad.
It better be fucking radical, bro. Sweet.
I would not be going back to my bed. Fuck that. I would be sleeping in my car.
Sounds totally gnarly.
I wouldn't sleep in my car because you drove your car to that bitch's house and that's probably cursed too.
Unless it was a work truck. Then the work truck's cursed, but the personal car's okay.
I mean, at this point, put a fucking tent in your backyard. That's too spooky to stay in the house. There's a rat in there.
I don't even think the property's safe anymore. The tent's out for me.
You better call someone. And Saul.
Saul.
I think Saul's a good choice.
Yeah.
Solid. Solid.
Solid. We'll get some salt, too, just, you know, to keep the diamonds away.
I mean, honestly, salt your doorways. It's not a bad idea.
Why not?
One of those doorways. Demons.
Probably keeps bugs out, too.
Mm-hmm.
As Bill was trying hard to go back to sleep, he started hearing sounds coming from underneath his bed, which frightened him. As he kept keenly listening to this sound, he saw a hand slowly crawl up the bed, and when it was about to catch his leg, he pulled his leg to his chest, and the hand went back. Bill got into a fetal position and spent the rest of the night in fear. Ugh. Ugh, the hand crawling.
He stayed in his bed?
He stayed in his bed.
I mean, I don't know that I would be able to get out of my bed, but I think I would jump on the bed till I could spring vault myself through the ceiling or something.
That's how the demons get you. That's why you can't leave your leg hanging over the side of the bed.
It's true. If you're not under the covers, you're free game.
Exactly. The next day, Bill did his best not to tell anyone about the weird events in his house, as he felt people would not believe him. He returned home later than usual and left the lights turned on for the night. As he kept watching the TV in the well-illuminated house, the lights turned off by themselves.
You got a poltergeist, homie.
Petrified by this, Bill ran into the closet to retrieve his flashlight. While in the closet, Bill started hearing the boxes on the topmost rack of the closet slamming. With every minute he stayed inside the closet, the slamming grew intense. Bill understood that whatever was inside the closet did not like him being there. So, what was the entity terrifying Bill? Find out in the next part.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which we have right here. We have part two right now.
You don't have to wait.
You don't have to wait. Terrified by the slamming, Bill rushed out of the closet, called his brother Bob, and asked him to come to his house. When Bob arrived, Bill asked him to go to the closet without saying anything. Although Bob initially refused to go in, as it sounded weird, he eventually gave in to his brother's pleas.
Why would you send... He obviously does not like Bob.
Well, and like... Hey, I need you to come over to my house right now.
And then just go in the closet.
Go in this closet. Like, no. You need to give me more information.
That's like blindly telling someone, smell this.
Right.
Fuck no. Absolutely not.
It's gonna be a no from me.
Like, is it good?
I have this problem where I will be like, oh, do you guys smell that? But I have two students in my class that don't have a sense of smell. And so I'll be
you
like...
You have more than one.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'll be like, oh, you guys smell that? And they'll both be like, no. And I'm like, thanks, smartass. I didn't mean you specifically. Okay, where was I? Okay, so yeah, he tells him to go in the closet. So, Bob got into the closet, turned off the light, and shut the closet door. Now, that's another thing. Why would you close the door? No. Mm-mm. No.
Bob's the first to die in a
There's literally no reason. He didn't say to close the door.
Why did he turn the light off?
Unnecessary.
Poor choice.
While he was standing inside the closet filled with darkness, he started feeling hard hits on his head and legs. When he instinctively turned on the lights to see what it was, he found nothing. Also, I don't have any lights in my closets. Do you have any lights in your closets?
In the walk-in, yeah.
Mm, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it was a walk-in. Creeped out, he immediately got out of the closet. But instead of telling Bill what he experienced in the closet, he told him everything seemed to be fine inside in order to not creep his brother out. Bill, however, felt terrible hearing this, as he felt he should have conveyed the events better to his brother. After his brother left, Bill called one of his close friends named Michael to tell him about the things happening to him. Michael was caught off guard hearing Bill rant about the paranormal events occurring around him, as something of this sort had not happened before. I should hope not.
Honestly.
Road work ahead. Yeah, I sure hope it does.
Well, and like, what if it just completely stops and his brother took the demon home and was like, yeah, it's cool, it's fine.
Well, yeah, or now they're both haunted. Now everyone's cursed.
They all got the oho and I don't like it.
As Bill and Michael kept speaking, Bill started to hear the same static he heard while speaking to the customer executive, and he started shouting on the phone asking Michael to not listen to it as it was evil. Michael, being a sound engineer, started recording this static, and when the static stopped, he played the recording to Bill. This recording clearly captured Bill's shouts, but the static was non-existent. Michael was stunned, as all he heard on the call was this static, but it was not recorded by the recorder.
the opposite of us trying to set our mics up.
Literally, oh my gosh. Yeah, the whole thing about us trying to get the mics set up, especially after not recording for a year, you guys, it was a doozy. So hopefully this sounds good.
I hope so.
Because we really tried. Because we love y'all. We want this to be a pleasurable experience for your ear holes.
And I'm trying to take feedback and talk louder.
Michael asked Bill to stay safe and cut the call. Scared to be alone in the house, Bill invited his brother Bob and his wife to come over to his house for dinner the next day.
What a dick.
Maybe, like, ask if y'all can go out to dinner, or, like...
Or, like, hey, so, I failed to tell you about the fucking demon in my closet. I let you go play with it, and then, you want some steak?
Well, this also kind of does remind me of the story of the Dybbuk box, because the guy, he goes and has dinner, like, with his brother-in-law and his sister.
And then he gives it to everyone in his family.
And then, suddenly, everybody's house smells like cat pee.
Rude. Cat pee and fire.
And jasmine. Resonant, like, a really strong jasmine smell. Yeah.
That sounds like your worst nightmare. Like, just all of the sensory bad smells.
Yeah, it's a lot. I like jasmine, though.
Like...
Lightly, yeah, not in, like, a overpowering. Pretty much any smell can be unpleasant if it's overpowering, I
think. And you're a super sniffer.
I am. So he invites them over for dinner. During the dinner, Bill was sitting on the chair in front of the TV, and Bob and his wife sat on the couch. As they were watching TV, Bill saw something dart across the room in his peripheral, which made him get out of his chair and chase it. Bob and his wife were confused by Bill's behavior, and when he returned, they asked him the reason behind it. Without saying anything, Bill asked Bob to sit on the chair he was sitting in previously and focus on his peripheral vision. When Bob did what Bill asked him to do, he got up from the chair startled. When Bill asked him what he saw, he confessed to seeing a 5-foot-tall bipedal creature running across the room. To make sure he was not seeing, or to make sure he was not making up stuff, he asked his wife to do the same, and she also confirmed seeing this creature. Unnerved by this, the couple asked Bill to come over to their house for a couple of days, but Bill refused, as he did not want to give up on his house. Although disturbed, Bill felt relieved, as he was not the only one seeing these strange things in the house.
I mean, I love y'all, but you end up seeing a demon in your house, you're not invited to my house.
Well, and like, again, the whole, like, horrible. You do this, you come over here and sit in this chair and see if you see it. And then if I saw it, I'd be like, well, you know, it's about time, I gotta be going, I have to take off, I have a big day tomorrow, I need to get the fuck out of here.
Gonna go mow my carpet. I have to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, but also rude. Like, it's too much. It's too much.
It's too much.
For the first time, Bill accepted that the things going on in his house were paranormal, and he started surfing the internet to know more about it.
It took you this long.
For the first time, it says.
Shame on you, Bill.
You know, Bill's just a really trusting guy, I think.
I just trust the demon rats running around my house.
That's, you know, fine. Or, like, you talk yourself out of it. You're
what,
like...
What the fuck did he think the hand was?
The hand is too much. But, like, the other thing, you could just be like, oh, yeah, maybe it was a rat. Like, maybe I need to, like, seal up some holes in the house. Maybe there's rats getting in. I don't know.
Just a demon rat hand coming up from underneath my bed.
And again, you know, why don't you just find a nice spot for the little guy to settle down?
Make him, like, get him one of those little teeny tiny dog beds.
Put out some treats, you know. It'll work out. As most of the things on the internet were not fact-checked, Bill reached out to a paranormal investigation team to help him out. See, this is smart. This is what you gotta do.
Call in the pros. Ghostbusters.
Exactly. The team inspected Bill's house thoroughly and set up multiple laser beams in Bill's bedroom where the events were most intense. When nothing unordinary happened, the team started to provoke whatever was in the house, and this actually worked. It's like Ghost Hunters or whatever.
I fucking love that show. I really do.
It's like, they have so many tools, and then, like, they'll do all those, like, replays, and, like, let's listen to that back with our enhanced audio.
And they're like, who's there? And then it shows up from, like, 26 different angles.
Like, over and over and over again.
It's good for my soul, but it drives my husband insane.
Or it'll, like, circle something on the screen, and you're like, yeah. That dog moved.
I fucking saw it, man. The funny thing is when, like, a whole box flies off a shelf and then they circle it like you didn't see
it. Like, as if you didn't notice that. Just in case you didn't see that. Here it is again. As they were taunting this entity, a laser beam in Bill's bedroom fell down on its own. The crew immediately rushed out and checked the footage from a camera placed in that room. The footage showed a mist forming in the room when the members started taunting, but the members swore that they did not see anything. When they cranked up the volume of the footage, the team noticed a demonic voice say, "Put it back," and "He's coming." Feeling that they had enough evidence, the team packed up their stuff and left the house, but before leaving, Brian requested Bill not to stay in that house anymore as he felt that something evil was occupying the house.
No, it just kindly reaches out from under your bed and grabs your leg.
Well, and he said put it back. And, you know, they knocked over something and they were like, oh, whoops, let me put that back. It's very polite, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, like, he's coming. Clearly you're just concerned that he's going to see you knock something over. Again, being very conscientious.
True. Valid. Just a polite demon.
I don't know how our conversation always turns towards, like, maybe the cryptid's just misunderstood. Maybe the demon's just trying to make contact. Maybe the rodent just needs a place.
I'm not trying to throw things around.
Maybe the rodent just needs a place to stay.
What if it's a giant rat?
A bipedal rat. Just like...
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Meanwhile, I'm over here chuckling at the idea.
See, but when I pictured it having, like, meth veins in its neck.
Oh, I was picturing, like, some Chuck E. Cheese motherfucker.
No, I thought of it fucking jacked with, like, steroid veins.
But it has to have the, like, cartoon droopy nose.
Oh, that's worse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I'm picturing, like, roided out steroid,
yeah,
heroin rat.
It's probably because that game Rampage, where we saw the animals and they get all like hulked out before they destroy a large city. I bet you that's what it was.
Valid.
Anyway, that night, Bill left all the lights turned on, played upbeat music, and tucked himself up on his bed.
So wait, he's still fucking.
He's still gonna sleep there. Get you a hotel, Bill.
And then apologize to the hotel owner, because this shit's gonna follow you.
He ain't listening to nobody.
No? Sure didn't.
He's just made up his mind about this. As he kept listening to this music, he heard what sounded like a truck smashing into the side of the house.
Oh, Christ.
Bill jumped out of his bed and ran out of his house to see the damage his property had sustained, but to his surprise, there was no truck, and everything was intact. As he stepped back into his house confused, he heard the same sound coming from the dining room, and this room is where he saw the creature dart through. He rushed into the dining room to see what was causing this sound, but he found all the things in place as if nothing had happened. Before he could gather himself, he heard the car alarm go off outside the house.
I don't fucks with that car accident sound.
Yeah,
like, no. Like, if you've ever been in a bad car accident,
yeah,
you can, like, hear the metal crunch.
Yeah, you don't forget that sound.
No, and you have, like, you close your eyes and you're falling asleep at night and that shit rips you out of a sleep.
Mm. Or even just, like, remembering it right now. Like, I feel icky thinking about it, you know? It's not a good memory.
That's a weird thing that I didn't realize was so horror story.
Yeah.
Story.
Yeah, can you imagine being, like, tucked up in your bed and, like, hearing that and being like, oh my god, a car just hit the house.
And there's not shit.
Yeah.
I've been in that situation, actually. We had a drunk driver. Do you remember when we
I
first
do remember
down
that.
Here,
yeah.
Who drove through our brick wall.
Yeah. So he didn't hit the house.
But the brick wall that was directly
the brick wall,
next to
it was
bedroom.
Right, yeah, right there by your window. Jeez.
Fuck that guy, though. He was fine.
Yeah, don't drink and drive.
With your fucking dog in the car.
Ugh, with anyone. Even if it's just you. But yeah, don't put anyone else's life in danger. Just call a Uber.
Call a Uber.
Okay, so the car alarm goes off outside the house. At this point, Bill understood that the creature in his house was messing with him, and he decided to confront it. When he started screaming at the top of his voice, asking the creature to show itself, he started hearing the crashing sound from his bedroom. He ran into his bedroom to fight this thing.
You're not gonna win against
Bro.
The demon, Bill.
Bill is so ballsy.
I hope you got some holy water or something, because I don't think you're gonna win.
It's like that meme that's like, I'm running off 2 hours of sleep, suicidal thoughts, and an Oreo, and I'm ready to fight God or become him.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's great. Anyway, it's a real meme.
Oh, I like it, though. Can't relate.
That's Bill. That's Bill right now.
Especially the Oreo. Yeah.
So the crashing sound... Okay, sorry, let me back up. He ran into his bedroom to fight this thing, but he saw nothing. Similar to the dining room, all the things were intact, but unlike the previous time, the crashing sound did not stop when he entered the room, and the deafening sound continued. The loudness of the sound kept increasing as Bill knelt down on the floor, covering his ears. Oh, I don't like this next part. When the sound finally stopped, Bill got back on his bed and decided to sleep.
How?
This man has, like...
How fucking tired do you have to be? To be like, well,
right,
couldn't fight it, so it's time to go nap now?
Like, I've got some adrenaline just reading this. Like, how do you just, like, no, I'm calm enough to just lay down, close my eyes, and knock out right now?
That's the people in those Appalachia stories I was telling you. They're like, I don't know, I just, if you saw it, no, you didn't. I went back to sleep.
Oh my god. No.
We will also do a whole other fucking series on Appalachian horror.
Also,
it's scary.
My sleep paralysis demon could never, like, that bitch won't never let me go back to sleep after that shit.
No.
I'm just in the bed like, what if it happens again? I've never had it happen twice in one night, but like...
But what if it does?
What if it does? So he gets back in his bed and decides to go to sleep. As he was lying on his bed trying to sleep, he saw a 6-foot-tall figure come out of his bed.
It grew a foot?
It was 5 feet. Maybe it was just, like, slouching, you know?
Yeah.
It stood near the foot of his bed staring at him, and after a few minutes, it crawled on his bed until its face was right in front of his.
Lick it.
Also, how you just keep laying there?
I'm telling you, if you get that close to my face, I guarantee I'm gonna lick you. That's self-defense. That's preservation.
Absolutely sounds like something my boyfriend would do too.
Lem.
Without breaking eye contact. Lem. Sorry, we're trying to be quiet. It's late. People are sleeping. Sorry. Without breaking eye contact.
Lem.
The figure opened its mouth to reveal its huge tooth, grunted loudly, and disappeared.
You just pictured it like a jack-o'-lantern tooth?
Like, yeah, like a big, goofy, one. Yeah, like hillbilly tooth. Just like SpongeBob, bro. What if that's the twist? This is SpongeBob. SpongeBob. The next morning, Bill woke up with deep scratches on his chest and back.
Because it's a demon.
It's a demon.
It's clearly a demon.
Things moved from bad to worse as the creature became more violent.
Because you told it you were gonna fight it.
Yeah. Waking up with scratch marks became a routine for Bill, and he was even hospitalized a couple of times.
Well, at this point, Bill's stupid for not just burning the house and starting over.
As Bill kept researching demons, he got to know more about exorcisms and possession. It was then he got reminded of the strange encounter he had at a customer's house where the lady was chanting something nonsensical.
You just casually forgot about it.
I don't know how you don't make that connection sooner.
Immediately.
Like, you were already creeped out when she was like, arrive at exactly 5 o'clock. She was planning this.
Yeah.
She was like, I'm gonna curse his ass at 5 on the dot.
The OVO only works at 5 for her.
She got all those other 3 guys together.
She got plans.
She was like, listen, I'll make y'all a nice lasagna, but you need to be here on time.
I have somewhere to be at 6 o'clock, so I'm going to give you the demons at 5.
When you have to curse somebody at 5, but you got Bible study at 6.
Shut the fuck up.
Okay. On giving it deeper thought, he understood that the lady was exorcising the 3 men kneeling near her as her chants resembled the chants he had heard in a few exorcism videos. So she was exorcising the demons.
She handed them over to her.
Exorcise the demons. He understood that the woman used him as a vessel to hold the demons she drove out of those 3 men.
How rude.
Yeah, how are you gonna ask somebody to come to your house and, like...
He's just trying to get you good quality H2O.
Right. This man trying to come and purify your water in your house, and you put a demon in him?
That's fucked, man.
Despite doing multiple exorcisms on her, on himself and his house, things never got any better.
Hold on, can you give yourself an exorcism?
I don't know. Maybe we'll do an episode on exorcisms.
Absolutely.
That's a long and dark history as well.
I'm in for it.
When asked why he did not sell the house and move on, Bill told people that he did not want anyone else to go through what he had been through.
Oh, fuck that. You told your brother to just climb into your demon closet and didn't even tell him why. Oh,
and his wife.
Anyone else to go through it.
Come That's and sit in my chair where I see the demon out of the corner of my eye. And that is the end of Eerie Encounters, the Bill Vail story.
Rude.
So, yes, thank you to Real Horror Diaries for that one. And we're getting ready for the next one. This one's super short.
I know that's you trying to hype me up. this one is called Julia Was a Clever Girl.
Yes.
A Clever Girl. By Reddit user, I Post at Midnight.
Good name.
It really is. Julia knew she was smart. She was one of those clever children, the kind who figures out early on that parents aren't all-powerful and all-knowing.
Mm.
Is that trauma, though? Or is that intelligence?
I think it's one of those unique cocktails of both.
Honestly. I mean, I feel like with high intelligence comes a little bit of trauma.
Yeah.
The first time she realized this was when she got scared. There had been a noise in her room coming from under her bed or from the closet. Julia ran down the hall crying, Mommy, Daddy, what's wrong, honey? I heard a monster, Julia glubbed.
Poor Julia.
Honestly. She expected them to comfort her or roll their eyes, maybe get annoyed. Instead, they jumped up and immediately raced to her bedroom, where they checked under the bed, inspected the closet, and tested her window lock. How nice.
Yeah,
That's
right?
So nice.
It's very reassuring.
They poked and prodded and scoured every inch. Julia caught on quickly. She knew what they were doing. By taking her fears seriously, they were showing the little girl that she was safe and loved.
Yeah.
They probably read about it in some book.
I mean, yeah. Or like, watched a video on Instagram about it.
I love those. I follow so many parenting pages because nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
Because there literally isn't a book about it. Like,
there's many books, but none of them are the correct one for your... There's not a manual for your specific child.
Right. And you specifically as their parent.
Honestly. I wish there was. But the lesson Julia learned was that she had power.
Mm.
Rude.
Julia was a clever girl.
Or was she a manipulative girl?
Manipulative little...
Thereafter, waking her parents became a nightly event.
Julia
would scream and cry, they would rush to her bedroom, and Julia would hide her grin behind tears. But not once did they ever complain.
I don't know if I believe that. Not stopped. Once
they didn't hear her
and she waking y'all up every night.
I'd be like, this bitch.
You'd be like, listen, this is enough. Like, maybe they need to be like Bill and just be like, we'll fight the monster.
Come out, I'll punch you in the dick.
Come out and face me, you coward.
One Oreo. One night, she could stand it no longer, and she burst out laughing when Daddy fell down, examining the light fixture as if a monster could fit up there. What's so funny, he asked, rubbing his backside. You, Julia smirked. You always believe me. Daddy wasn't angry. He just looked at Mommy. Once, he said quietly. Just once. We didn't believe your brother. And Julia... An only child did not sleep well that night.
Ooh. That made my hairs stand up. That's a good one, though.
Rude.
And that's the end of that one.
Could you imagine your kid, your whole ass kid gets eaten by a monster or whatever, and then your other kid is so fucking manipulative.
Yeah.
That she's like, hey, guess what? You're gonna come to my room every night. And they're like, yeah, the fuck we are, so you don't get eaten by a demon.
They don't eat you, too. And then for her to, like, giggle about it and be like, well, you know, Julia, you did have a brother.
You manipulative piece of shit.
So funny now, is it, Julia? But then, like, what if he's just faking, too? Like, they get back to the bedroom. And the mom's like, I really don't think you should have said that to her. And he's like, nah, she had it coming.
But do you think it'll work? And both of them are like, fuck, I hope so.
The next night. She's not gonna call us now, is she?
Watch, that's the night they ignore it. She doesn't get eaten by a demon.
And then, you know, they'll try again in a couple of years.
Tell me why that has Diane Downs vibes.
Maybe they're like, maybe we're just not cut out for kids. Maybe this house doesn't want us to have any more children. Or maybe it does. Maybe it's hungry.
Ooh.
Maybe we need another child for the monster. Maybe they're like Bill and they just learned to get along.
Are we about to write a creepypasta?
Are we writing one right now?
I think so.
We're writing the sequel to the Julia story. Okay. And then this last one, I think, is the longest one, but it's a good one. I do not know how to pronounce this Reddit user's name. I think it's Erutius or Erutius, E-R-U-T-I-O-U-S. So that is the user who wrote this story, which is called The Face in the Wall. Here we go. Terry's day started with the previous shift, dragging inmate Harrison from his cell. The two officers, old pros at this, had him cuffed up and held under each arm. The yard sergeant coming behind as he manfully attempted to hold the inmate's kicking legs. Sergeant Lehman wasn't a small guy, somewhere between a bodybuilder and a sideshow strongman, and even he was having trouble keeping a hold of the struggling inmate. Harrison was 6.5 feet tall, and most of it was ankles and elbow. As they took him out, he was screaming loud enough to shake the cobwebs up in the rafters. Make it stop! Make it stop! Make it stop talking! Terry grabbed a leg as he tried to help Lehman get the struggling man off the quad. Terry, Officer Greenwood to his charges, had just come in for his first shift of the week, and he couldn't think of a more tumultuous way to begin the week.
He was just over here like, fucking Mondays, man.
Yeah, literally. He's like, God, this shit again? Like, why I gotta work 4-10s and this is the first one?
Fucking mandatory OT.
Yeah. He had expected they were just taking him to the shower. He stank and was likely being forced to clean himself, but they headed straight out of the quad and into the sallyport where Officer Carr was waiting with the restraint chair. What the hell happened? Terry asked after the five of them managed to wrestle the struggling man into the chair and secure the straps.
Could you imagine a restraint chair being like just a regular-ass part of your Monday?
Yeah. I mean, that's... people that work in prisons, like, they have a lot of things going on.
Prisons and hospitals, man.
Yeah.
And both of them are haunted as fuck.
Anytime you gotta work with the public...
They're gross, dude.
It's rough.
They're gross.
Okay, so... Oh, what the hell happened, he asked him. They strapped him in. We don't know. He'd been kind of quiet all day, but just as the sun started setting, he started screaming and banging, causing a fuss. We had Perry come down here to talk to him, but he couldn't get shit out of him. Really? Perry couldn't get anything out of him? That dude could charm the birdies from the trees. Nope, couldn't get a word in edgewise. He said all he did was keep gibbering about someone in the cell talking to him. We're gonna take him down to medical for observation. Do me a favor and put in some paperwork on the sink in there. He broke it while he was spazzing out. Terry said he would, and with that they were off and rolling towards medical. Harrison continued to buck as they rolled away, his eyes going towards the cell he had left. His eyes were wide and white, crazed like a horse's eyes. And Terry felt slivers of fear creep into him. What had he seen that had him scared so much? Would he see it too? Terry hoped not as he headed for the station.
Got that blue-eyed gaze.
Yeah.
Have you seen those TikToks?
I haven't, no.
Like, most people who have blue eyes, their, like, casual eye position, you can see most of the white of their eyes.
Yes.
Around their eye, like, iris.
I was just thinking about that Netflix series, too, with that girl, May. Wasn't that what it was called?
Oh,
they, like, take in that girl.
Yeah. I don't remember what the fuck it was called, but it's a good one.
But she has those, like, big blue...
She's, like... weird, like, alien pretty.
She's very beautiful. Pretty, but yeah, she's, like, got that kind of, like, yeah, eerie quality to her, but yeah, she's got those eyes that, like, even though they're blue, they're very large. Her iris is very large.
My dog has eyes like those, and I call them his Charles Manson eyes.
But we love him.
He's a sweet little psychopath.
Yeah. Officer Tobri was there, as well as Sergeant Wayne, and the cocky young officer grinned at him as Terry walked up the stairs into the station proper. I guess we'll have to change our count before we get started then. Doesn't look like Harrison is going to be back anytime soon. Terry shrugged. I guess so. He seemed pretty rattled. He's been rattled since he got here. Dude takes enough pills to keep his psych grade in check, but he's one bad day away from losing his marbles.
Hey, I take offense to that.
Right? Yeah, there's some verbiage in here that, like, we wouldn't use personally, but I'm just reading the story as it's written, and this is the author's, you know, voice.
You know, I just mean that most times I'm one bad day away from losing my marbles.
I mean, sometimes it do be like that.
Sometimes your marble bag just falls open.
Sometimes you just, like, I ain't no more marbles.
Sometimes they just ain't enough rocks.
Tombry clapped him on the shoulder, Terry turning to look at him as he cocked his head back towards the door. Come on, man. Let's get these degenerates counted. Terry nodded as he followed, sliding his notebook out as he prepared to count the dorm. As they came into Quad 4, Terry couldn't help but glance at Harrison's old cell. The door was open, and the inside hung blackly in the lighted quad. The dying light through the window made a smoky square on the floor, and in that strange light, Terry felt that he could see something on the far wall. He had thought someone was hiding in there, but he remembered that no one could be in there. The wing was secure, no one capable of leaving their cells or moving around, and when he walked past the open door, he stopped for a few seconds as he studied the spot at the back of the cell. Taking out his flashlight, he shone it in and gasped as he tried to keep his grip on it. It had fallen on something in the back of the cell that looked surprisingly like a face. He stood there for a count of five, just staring at the wall, but the longer he looked at the spot, the less it looked like the face he thought he'd seen at the start. The face he had seen had been that of a stunted old man, the kind with a mischievous face that you watched your kids around. The more he looked at him, though, the less it looked like anything more than a swirl of paint on the back wall. It was silly to think it could have been anything else, but as he looked at it, the more he could see that face lying just below the painted surface.
Did you read that story in high school about the yellow wallpaper?
No.
Bro. It's really good.
I need to read it, okay.
Yeah.
I'll read it.
It's got that kind of vibe.
You see something you like in there? Came a voice in his ear, and Terry jumped about a foot. Tobri had come down after counting upstairs and found Terry just standing there looking into the cell. Thought I saw... But Terry thought better of it before telling Tobri about the face. Some graffiti or something. I was gonna write it up, but I guess it was nothing. Toby shrugged. Looks like he slagged that sink, though. Guess we could write him up for that. Terry nodded, and the two of them moved back to the station to give their numbers to the sergeant. That was how it started, and it was a moment that Terry would reflect on often. Terry arrived home around 7 the next morning and fell into bed in his uniform. It had been a hell of a night, and not just because of Harrison. He and Tobri had gone about their usual duties, handing out mail and checking on the nightly chore list, but it seemed that something always drew them back to Quad 4. Some kind of fracas always dragged them back down to the floor, and this was the busiest they'd ever been. There had been 2 fights, one of them requiring help to break up, and 3 different inmates had to be taken to confinement after lights out when they started kicking doors. Terry was usually pretty good at talking to them, but tonight there had been no chance for communication. They kept yelling about people talking to them, telling them things they didn't want to hear, and wanting them to stop. In the end, they had sent 6 people to confinement, and it had taken all night to pack their property. On top of that, there was also the weird noises in Quad 4 that night.
It's the payment.
Yeah, right?
I told you, prisons are haunted as fuck.
Well, and, like, there's already so much sound in those places, yeah. And the inmates are probably very used to those sounds, so if there's excess sound, they're gonna notice that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or, like, telling them to stop. Like, even if the dude in the cell next to you keeps trying to whisper to you and talk to you, you'd be like, shut up.
Look
up,
bruh.
Like, stop, bruh. Terry could believe that they were hearing strange whispers, because he could hear them too. Every time he went out to do a round, every time he found himself out there packing property, whenever he was out there pulling people apart and making the rabble go back to their cells, he could hear a low whisper that permeated everything out there. It was a small, ugly little voice, the voice of a witch in a kid's story, and it told Terry how worthless he was all night. It slid across his skin like a wire brush, and he came to dread the time he had to spend in that quad.
Ooh, Arucious, I like your writing style.
Yeah, very good writing. Strangely, it also seemed to be trying to lure him into Harrison's old cell. As he fell into an exhausted sleep, he could almost hear the words again. Scurry, scurry, little mouse. You dare not come into my home. I taste your fear, weakling. You don't have the sand to come face me. Step into my house and see what sort of man you really are.
Yuck.
Or should I have done that in a more of a witchy voice? Scurry, scurry, little mouse.
I'd be like, these hallucinations got me fucked up. I'm laughing.
Yeah, right. Scurry, scurry, little mouse. You'd be like, I'm a little mouse. I do be scurrying, though. Just fucking roasting the demon. Oh, that's good.
Don't you wish you could, like, roast your sleep paralysis demon?
Dude, oh my god.
You'd be like, you long, ugly, skanky bitch.
And, like, I think the thing that's most frustrating for me about the sleep paralysis thing is, like, I know that it's happening, and I know, like, what I need to do to try to, like, get it to stop.
But that fucked up impending doom feeling won't stop.
Yeah, the panic just grips you, and then all of a sudden I'm hyperventilating.
You just wake up like...
Yeah. I felt so bad. It happened just a couple weeks ago. I had been on a trip, and when I came back home, you know, we lay down to sleep, and it was, like, right away. Like, we hadn't even been asleep, maybe 10 minutes, I'd say. And I couldn't do anything except, like, start gasping really loud.
Aww.
And my boyfriend, like, elbows me real hard. And he's like, wake up, you're having a bad dream, or you're having sleep paralysis or whatever. And I finally, like, came out of it, and I go, I know, but I didn't like it. No shit, Dusty. I'm glad it woke him up, and then he could, like...
Rescue you?
Yeah, get me, just elbow me real hard and be like, knock it off, loser.
I didn't even ask for this.
Yeah, right? And like I said, I know that it's happening, but I can't do nothing.
But, you know, even if you couldn't do nothing, if you could just call it a stinky hoe,
yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Maybe I'll try that next time, just in my head. Be like, you a grotsky little bitch anyway.
Dirty little tart, leave me alone.
He could see that face again, working its way up from the wall, rising from the painted surface as the features began to come out. He was looking at the worn face of a wicked old warlock, looking for someone to draw into hell to take his place. And Terry was powerless to stop it as he held the face in the beam of his flashlight again. He was aware of walking towards it, slowly but surely, and the closer he got, the less he wanted to. The face got bigger and bigger, taking up the wall as it grew, and the mouth opened to reveal rows of razor-sharp teeth.
Gotta eat it.
Ugh.
Could you imagine getting eaten by some Harry Potter shit.
That really is. The face just grows and grows until it's the whole wall and eats you.
Lem.
And then suddenly you're in potions class. Lem. I wouldn't lick the wall, though.
No, absolutely not. In a fucking men's prison. No, thank you.
It's unsanitary.
You might get pregnant.
When it opened, the teeth attempting to clamp down on him, Terry woke up with a furious start. He didn't sleep well that day, and it showed as he stumbled into F dorm that night.
You don't want to be underslept working in a prison.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough going into work, any kind of job when you haven't slept well, but you really need to be on your toes for some of these positions.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Tobri whistled as he came stumbling up the stairs. You look like hell, Greenwood. Not getting sick, are you? Terry shook his head, but honestly, he felt sick. He had managed to fall asleep after a series of bad dreams that morning, and woken up just in time to see he had 20 minutes to get to work. Given that it took 30 minutes to drive to work, Terry was pretty glad that he had slept in his uniform. It was a little rumpled, but he threw his coat on and ran out the door, stopping by the kitchen long enough to grab a TV dinner out of the freezer and pull his boots on before running out in his sock feet. He had only been 5 minutes late, speeding the whole way here, and his captain had, thankfully, been understanding. "Well, hopefully tonight is less of a three-ring circus than last night," Tobri said. "Come on, partner. Let's get this show on the road." Right off the rip, though, the shift began to list. Terry found two empty beds where inmates had been the day before, their roommates telling them they had been taken to confinement for getting mouthy. The door to Harrison's old cell had been closed, but it did nothing to cut the sound of the spidery whispers that Terry had heard last night. He tried to tell himself he had remembered it wrong, that the whispering was something he had heard in the dream and attributed to his time in Quad 4 yesterday, but as he stood before that closed door, he could hear that caustic scuttling across his senses. Yeah. "Open the door, weakling. Don't worry, I won't bite." The voice sounded pleased with its little joke, but Terry found that he didn't dare open that door and take a look.
Nope.
We're just gonna keep walking right on past that cell.
I'm gonna nope right the fuck past it.
You know what? We don't even need to go in Quad 4 tonight.
Nope. Y'all good? Good.
Good. That night, he and Tobri were absolutely slammed. They had to break up another fight, and after lights out, they had several others kicking doors. It got so bad that Terry finally just turned the TV on to dampen the whispering they all said they could hear. It helped a little, but there was a lot of grumbling amongst the cells as Terry walked his rounds. He didn't doubt they could hear it. Terry could hear it, and it seemed to get louder every time he walked past the cell they had taken Harrison from. When he looked through the little glass window, Terry thought he could see eyes looking back at him.
Yuck.
The reflections were like a dog's eyes, red and sparkly in the light of his flashlight, but the wall was still flat and featureless. That's like that other story we read of, like, those eyes, like, human eyes don't do that, that kind of thing.
Yep.
As the two of them left the next morning, Tobri clapped him on the shoulder and reminded him that at least they would have the next 2 days off. "We can rest up for the long weekend to come, and hopefully it won't be as bad as these 2 days." Terry hoped so, but as he fell into his bed again, the dream was waiting for him. It was the same thing as the day before. He was alone in the quad, the cells empty, and their doors open and gapping. The lights seemed to buzz darker in their cages tonight, and the face snickered as it pushed its way out of the wall. The wrinkles on its skin made it look like a carved wooden thing, but its eyes glowed with mirth. It grew larger and larger as Terry watched, held captive by the thing in the beam of his light, and as the face pushed out of the wall, it slithered free on a long tail of flesh.
Ew, like a big flesh sperm with a wood face.
Yes, exactly like that.
Some kind of fucked up tadpole, you know?
Terry could see a body pushing its way behind him, the majority trapped behind the paint. But as it opened its I'm sorry. I've been doing really good, though.
Yes.
As it opened its mouth wide to bite him, he realized it hardly needed anything but the long trailing flesh tumor, its mouth of pointy teeth. What?
What?
I don't know, man. Terry could still feel the burning from the bite as he came awake, and it persisted for quite a while. He spent that first day in a perpetual, oh my god. It's getting late.
Eldritch in the evening.
In the late, late evening.
I mean, I think technically we're almost in the morning.
Almost. He spent that first day in a state of perpetual doze. He would fall asleep and the dream would be waiting for him. The monster would come slithering out of the wall, ready to bite, and Terry could do nothing but stand there and watch it happen in the beam of his flashlight. It bit him again and again and again, each bite burning as he came awake. Terry was limping by the time he got up on Thursday morning in the wee hours, and as he sat watching TV, his legs itched from the bites. He could feel something like infection working its way up them, but they looked the same as they always had. He stayed awake most of Thursday, taking cat naps in his recliner, but even then, he was constantly falling back into the dreams.
Like a people beach.
Yeah. Or like when you're sick and you just like sleep, wake up, sleep, wake up, sleep, wake up, and you're like, I don't know what day it is.
Some kind of weird fucked up fever dream.
Yeah. By Friday, Terry was exhausted, but he couldn't afford to call out. He put on a fresh uniform as he staggered out the door, not sure he had the energy to do much more than shamble to his post and sit down. That was the night when Carter decided to take a hostage, and the creature decided to leave his dreams and enter the real world.
Yeah.
Carter had the cell next to Harrison's. He had been kicking on the second night and should technically have been taken to confinement, but the sergeant over there said they were out of room and asked Terry to try and work things out without resorting to rehoming them in the box. Carter had quieted once the TV had come on, but he still looked shell-shocked when they left the dorm out for breakfast that morning. He had a haunted expression as the two officers conducted first count, and when his roommate asked Terry if he could swap cells, Terry gave him the same tired line about how this was prison, not summer camp, and you don't get to pick your bunkie. "I know, Sarge, but..." The inmate looked back at Carter as the man stared at the wall. "He's been acting weird. He whispers to himself at night, and I think he might hurt me." "If he tries, we'll come save you. Until then, this is your house, so clean it up," Terry monotoned before going back to counting. It was an hour later as Terry tried to stay awake during his paperwork when the pounding from the quad brought them around. Toby asked Terry if he would go check it out, and Terry was thankful for an excuse to walk around, until he got to the floor and saw what was going on. Inmate Carter had closed himself and his roommate into the cell and was demanding to speak with the captain. He was holding his roommate in a headlock as he pressed a big, jagged piece of metal to his throat, threatening to kill him if he didn't get what he wanted. "I want to be out of this quad," he screamed at Terry as he tried to reason with him. "I want to be away from the whispering, and I want to sleep without nightmares, and I want to be out of this cell."
"Me too, bro."
"Bro. We all want to be out of this cell with you, man." It was just he and Tobri that night. Sergeant Wayne had called out, and Terry was relaying information to Tobri and telling him to get the captain down there right away. Most of the inmates had already closed themselves in, not wanting to get wrapped up in any part of this, and before Terry quite knew it, he found himself alone in the quad. Their faces were pressed against the glass, watching it all unfold from the safety of their cells, but they were as good as miles away behind the steel doors. Tobri came in over the radio, telling him that the captain was getting a group together to come along. ETA was about 3 minutes, but it turned out they didn't have that long.
The way he described that is like when there's drama in an apartment complex.
Oh my god.
And everybody's just peeking out.
Yes. Carter screamed suddenly, letting his roommate go as he clutched at his ears and shouted his fear towards the ceiling. "Only one way to make it stop," he screamed, trigger warning, and when he plunged that piece of metal into his neck.
Ooh.
Terry let the radio slip as he ran forward without thinking. He keyed the emergency lock on the rolling cell door, the roommate shooting out into the quad as the door came open. He went screaming for the inner door as Terry came into the cell and as inmate Carter went to the ground. Terry put a hand to his spurting neck to try and stop the flow of blood. He shouldn't have gone into the cell with an unrestrained inmate. He shouldn't have been elbow deep in blood without gloves. Terry should have waited for medical and backup, but as he pressed against the ugly wound from which the piece of metal grew, his only thought was of not watching this man die.
Understandable.
Yeah. Terry was looking into Carter's face, the crazy draining out right along with his blood, when the lights began to flicker inside the cell.
Ugh.
Whew, that gave me a chill, too.
Yeah.
It's very visual, like, I can see it in my mind, you know?
This had to be written by someone who's worked in a prison before.
Yeah, I think so. The lights coming from the window, from the pole light on the yard, cast them into an eerie glow, but Terry didn't feel fear until the lights went out in the quad as well. He could hear Toby yelling from the radio he had left in the middle of the quad, the roommate nowhere to be seen, and all Terry could think to do was keep his hand over the gushing wound in Carter's neck.
I'm not gonna lie, though, I don't want to be anywhere where the lights are off. Like, I could be in the middle of a fucking Toys R Us, and I still don't want to be there with the lights off.
Yeah, and things look so different in the dark. Yep. That it's like you almost sort of preemptively get spooked out a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Even just, like, driving someplace where you're like, I've been here before, but it was in the daylight, and now that it's dark, I don't know how to get there. Or, like, everything looks different. I'm doubting myself.
Dude, when I worked in a movie theater, like, you want to be done before the credits shut off because that's the spookiest dark.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, no thank you. I don't like that. Mm-mm.
There's just certain dark that's spooky-ooky.
Yeah. Or the whole thing of, like, the pile of clothes on the chair next to your bed.
Yeah.
It's just a pile of clothes in the daylight, but at nighttime,
looks like people.
It's a daemon.
I can see the horns and everything.
Exactly. Okay, back to the story. It is pretty graphic here, so I'll give another trigger warning. I almost said traffic warning.
This is your traffic update.
Yeah. we've got an accident out here on the I-10. It's a three-car backup, and helicopters are coming in to assist. It seems like everyone's okay, but this is going to take us at least 20, 30 minutes to clean up, folks. You're going to want to avoid this area.
Do you remember those? Like, you'd drive to work or school or whatever in the morning, and parents put on the radio, and it was like, yeah, the traffic update, the traffic report.
Mm-hmm. Totally unrelated. Do you remember the commercial? And this is just, like, hit my brain today. It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Do you know where your children are? I saw a thing on Instagram, too, recently that, like, those commercials where they'd be like, don't forget to hug your children and, like, be nice to your children. Like, they had to literally make PSAs about, like, being nice to your offspring. Don't forget to hug your children.
It sounds like Smokey the Bear.
Yeah.
Only you can prevent generational trauma.
Oh, man.
But anyway, this guy's bleeding out and the lights just
So like
off.
I said, trigger warning, not traffic warning. Trigger warning.
A good segu.
Segu. Very good segu. Segue. So, he was shivering, the man convulsing against him, and as he looked into the murky darkness around him, he heard the catch release on the door to the cell next to him. "Give me my prey," came the whispering voice from his dreams as it slithered from that dark womb.
What?
Carter whimpered against him, trying to press himself against Terry like a frightened child. This was clearly what had driven him to the edge, and now it was here to get him. The gloopy sound of a legless horror could be heard pulling itself closer to the pair as they cowered in the dark, and Terry felt certain that this was how he would die. The mouth would open up, just as it had so many times before, and swallow them both up.
I don't want nothing that sounds gloopy.
Yeah, I really like that definition, the gloopy sound of a legless horror. Like that, if that don't put an image in your head, I don't know what else will.
Yucky.
Also, big Fern Gully vibes.
Honestly, I'm expecting this to sound like Tim Curry.
I don't think I could do a Tim Curry impression, so you guys are gonna have to wait on that.
I would be floored. Like, I already love you as a human, but dude, if you could get any better, it might be when you talk to me like Tim Curry.
Let me practice it for a little while. I'm not ready to debut my Tim Curry impression just yet.
When you are, I'm here for it.
The team that was on their way would find nothing but an empty quad, and Terry would be just one more mystery for the guards and inmates of Stragview to speculate on. Terry closed his eyes, bending protectively over Carter as the thing drug itself closer, and when he peeked through slitted lids, he could see something like a multi-tentacled slug as it stood in the doorway of his cell. "Give him to me!" it screeched, but as the lights came back on, Terry was momentarily blinded by the sudden intrusion. Something hit him in the chest then, and as he fell across the inmate, he heard boots slapping the concrete.
Got Lovecraftian vibes.
Mm-hmm. Then there were people screaming his name. Carter was jerked away from him as strong hands helped him up, and Terry was being led out of the quad as people spoke to him in voices that sounded alien. He was aware of being in the station, the captain shaking him as he asked what had happened. He was aware of being in the captain's office next, several people standing far too close as they discussed what was wrong with him. His life happened in little jumps and bumps, and finally he was in one of the back rooms in medical, staring off into nothing as he tried to keep himself from falling apart. Someone had put a blanket around him, and he was sitting in a stark white room on a bed they usually saved for patients in need of care. He thought he was alone, but someone cleared their throat. He realized that the warden was sitting near the counter, a file folder in his hand, and a Cheshire Cat smile on his face.
Ooh.
"Well, it seems you've finally come back to us, Officer Greenwood." Terry stared at him, uncomprehending, but seemed to have discovered his voice. What the hell was that? The warden steepled his fingers, seemed to contemplate his answers. 20 years ago, there was an inmate named Frost. Frost was a bad man who liked to do bad things to children. He was serving a very long sentence, but someone decided to shorten it for him. They slammed his head against that wall so hard you could see his face in the wall for a little while afterwards. We painted over it a few times, and it finally started to fade. After a little, we started putting people in that cell again, but something happened. We started seeing an increase in crazed inmates. They complained about voices, whispers, seeing things after lights out, and it drove more than one of them insane. After a while, we found a few of them dead, either by their own hands or something else. We tried closing the cell, but it didn't work. Frost was angry, but Frost was also content to torture people who happened to find themselves in that cell. We remembered how we'd gotten rid of the ugly indentation of his face in the concrete, so every month we painted the cell. We paint it with the thickest latex paint that we can, and it takes him a little longer every time to come back.
The landlord special is the solution.
Dude, the fucking, like, he's the roach on the wall, like, I will have my revenge!
Just the hairs painted to the baseboard, like, I will get you!
It takes him a little longer every time to come back. It's not a permanent solution, but it's the best we have. Terry sat there, taking all this in, trying to make sense of it, but coming up short. Why not just... But the warden put up a hand to stop him. Whatever you're about to say, we've tried it. He's a monster, a disease, and he always comes back. He turned to go, stopping at the door as Terry looked after him. Take the weekend off, come back fresh on Monday. I'll have a crew in there tonight to paint that cell, and hopefully that will keep him in check for a little longer. Over the next 3 days, do what you have to do to forget what you've seen. Drink yourself into oblivion, take sleep meds, but try to ignore what dreams might still linger.
Okay, but don't do both of those things, because yeah, you'll die.
Right? We're trying not to have Officer Greenwood pass away. Don't let him stay. Push him out as best you can, or one day you might wake up and find that face on your own wall, and we'll have to fill your position with something besides a layer of latex paint. Terry watched him go, not sure what to believe, but wanting nothing so much as the oblivion of a peaceful sleep, knowing he probably wouldn't get it. His chest ached suddenly, and he looked down at the bruise someone had treated. They had laid his uniform shirt and undershirt across a nearby chair, and as Terry looked, he felt his mouth go very dry. The bruise on his chest looked like nothing so much as a formless blob, but the longer he looked, the more he could see the hooked nose and hateful eyes that had stared back at him from that cell.
Yuck.
Ugh.
You got a pedophile in your chest. Don't like that.
Don't like that. And, like, it's very creepy that, like, it was on the wall, and then it was out of the wall, and now it's in you, bro. It seemed that Frost might be harder to escape than even the warden had thought, and Terry just knew that as his eyelids tried to slip closed, he would find that gaping mouth waiting for him, and the cell would be his hell for all eternity.
Ew.
The end.
Yuck.
So yes, Erucius, if that is how you pronounce it, sorry if not. Very well written. We like that.
Yep.
And with that, we are drawing our first creepypasta episode to a close. If you like us reading creepypasta, let us know. If you have other creepypasta that we should read, let us know. If you write creepypasta, send it to us. And on that note, if you have a listener tale, please send it to us. If you have a case suggestion, please send it to us. If you have a request, please send it to us at theeldritchestate@gmail.com. Send us a listener tale.
Or creepypasta, or whatever the fuck. Send us an email. Just say hi.
Just, you know, send us anything. You can comment on our posts. You can send us some memes. You can like, share, comment, subscribe, retweet, swipe right, etc. Is it swipe right? I don't know.
It's like, are we dating?
We're dating.
We should make the podcast a Tinder profile just because I like to reject people.
We think you're pretty cute, and we'd like it if you'd like us back.
We're interested in ghosts and demons and macaroni and cheese.
And we're ready to take things to the next level. We're getting pretty serious here.
I know. Look at us recording for the first time in a year.
Look at us. Also, the podcast just celebrated its second birthday, so happy 2 years to the pod.
2 years? Oh, yeah, because we didn't record for a year.
So the podcast...
was kind of born on a leap year, sort of.
Sure, we'll go with that. Yeah, so like I said, we are going to get back to a regular recording schedule. Please expect more from us out of the next few weeks and months, but we are still adjusting, and Katie does still have a child under the age of 2 that takes up a lot of her time. So we're working on it, but we're happy to be back. We're so happy.
It's so nice.
And we'll catch you in the next one.
Bye. We missed you.
And remember, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave.